Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Stephen Robinson says, holy shit, why is it? Because it started all of a sudden. Yeah, I had a bug, and so I restarted, and somehow it started before. But why do you guys say, what the? It's just the regular show starting, right? Or is there anything weird with the video or audio? Anyways, we are live, I believe. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? I wanted to call out today a behavior that I see in women, and we're seeing a stunning example of it on Twitter right now with Julia Song. You know, this idea that in arguments, it is a valid thing to, as a female, to demean the man sexually. You know how these arguments with women, sometimes they end up with, oh, well, you're a loser. ladies. I know it's not all women who do this, but learn some basics of argumentation here. The argument you are a loser is never good, or you are somehow sexually deviant. And she did it two times. She did it to a guy, I called her out, and she ended up calling me gay. Julia Song is this one American news host. Of course, I have nothing against the girl. I just want to correct her behavior and show her the way. I don't know much about her. It seems that she's in the right-wing hosting type of thing. I don't have a strong opinion of her. I don't know her stuff. But it's definitely not right-wing behavior to be shaming heterosexuals by calling them gay. She says, yes, most people do not have tattoos. Okay, that does not make you a cool guy. I thought I had made a 57-tweet thread about this not long ago. Quotation mark, I don't have tattoos and no one has ever sucked my dick. Hey, hey. How cool am I? Let's just talk about that. Haha. So this was merely a guy, not harassing Julia Song, not directing anything at her. He was saying, are there still people in this country who have zero tattoos, or is it just me? That is a very decent question. The tattoos are way too common. And when you have no tattoos, you end up feeling special in this environment where everyone has tattoos. So it's absolutely unjustified for Julia Song to be somehow claiming that not having tattoos means he's not going to have his dick sucked. First, if he had his dick sucked, that would be a waste of sperm because you won't get a baby with your dick sucked. Secondly, there's no evidence that his absence of having tattoos is anyhow linked to an absence of sexual life for this man. He is a Mustang man in Texas, a single Christian Texan patriot. Absolutely unjustified to assume that he has no sex life just because he doesn't have tattoos. And so I said to Julia Song, come on, real Julia Song. Respect the man. He's proud of not having tattoos. He appreciates the beauty of his natural self. That's no reason to demean him sexually. And so I think it's if you're going to let people with tattoos be proud of their tattoos, at least let people who don't have tattoos wear their non-tattooism as an article of pride. And I personally find the female body, certainly, and the male body, yes, but most importantly, the female body is so much more beautiful without tattoos. Tattoos are just ruining a perfect design of nature. Aquanode says, imagine permanently putting tacky decals on your one and only body just because you have low self-esteem. Mengele says, women did not evolve for argumentation. Their only method for punishing men is lack of sex. Yeah, and it's like, in the current world, I'm sorry, ladies, you've given up your leverage. Because sex is so easy to get. Having a small YouTube channel will get you just infinite amounts of sex. Just as much as you require. You can literally have queues organized around your house, and that you're gonna have your balls exhausted if you just start a small YouTube channel about philosophy or whatever. So the idea of denying men sex doesn't have the power that you think it has. Now she responds to me. I found that hilarious. How about you? Do you appreciate the beauty of his natural self? So just because I'm appealing to, hey, don't shame men sexually, she's like, oh, maybe you're gay. You talk about his beautiful body without tattoos. You seem to be gay. And my answer to this is now you're calling a man with a demonstrated history of successful heterosexual insemination gay. Real Julia Song, not good. Not good. Wink. I hope that she has taken the wink as the fact that I'm not truly insulted and that I'm playing with her here. But wow, what an interaction. It's been, I don't, I may have never been accused of being gay on Twitter. It's like, as far as I know, I am the most ardent defender of heterosexuality. And I am one of the most proud heterosexuals in the world. I keep encouraging people, focus on the vagina, focus on full insemination, focus on making babies. And there you go, Julia Song goes after me. There are now people publishing further evidence that Elisa Bleu has been engaging in sexual filming of video clips in the rap industry. And so this, I don't know if I've ever given the full description of this case on the show. I did a Twitter thread about it. So it's the whole story that led to the temporary suspension of Brittany Venti and the Quartering. So the whole idea is Elisa Bleu had video clips of her making sexy poses for the camera, and she regretted these things. She considers that she has been the victim of human trafficking. So she considers that she didn't consent to these things. She successfully got her original video removed by World Star Hip Hop on the claims that, hey, this is human trafficking because I had a pimp who forced me to do this, and so it wasn't consensual. Something along those lines. Although she's not as, I don't think that she's strictly saying the words that I just said, but she's letting it be heard that it's something like this that justifies removing the video for sparing her shame. So Twitter accepted her request and made it basically illegal to share that video on the platform. And that's why the Quartering and Brittany Venti being banned, because they decided to share that video, screenshots of that video anyways. Now, that video got deleted from YouTube at her request. That video got banned from Twitter. And the whole idea is Elisa Bleu is in this business of self-promotion of herself as combating human trafficking. And that's why she was she was a big fan of the right at some point, because when Elon Musk took over Twitter, she had the opportunity to push for more controls on child exploitation on Twitter. But now I won't show it on screen, but they found another rap video of her with bikini poses and sexily dancing, with her boobs basically coming out of the bikini. So now what do you do? Is it going to be the same thing as the old video? Is it going to lead people to be banned? It seems that people are are currently sharing that video, and they are not getting banned. So the problem here is, to what extent can women stop consenting after the act? And it's a problem we've been touching on in the Donald Trump cases, where all these women pop out and he raped me, he raped me, he sexually abused me, sexually assaulted me. And you have this problem that it seems that a lot of the cases we see, including Elisa Bleu, are they become non-consensual as part of a narrative that the woman tells herself about her past. Like, if you sign a contract that makes you a dancer, exotic dancer in some video, rap video clip, and you accept willfully to be in front of the camera and show your boobs, there shouldn't be a point in the future at which you can retract this. You have signed the contract to a rights company, to a rap group, or whatever. You have given away the rights to this image. You cannot come back later and say, that was human trafficking. I didn't want to sign the contract, but I signed it still. I don't know to what extent she's bound into contracts, but whatever was the deal, as I see her dance in front of the camera, whatever was the deal, it led her to accept making this dance in front of the camera. This doesn't look like she is being, she, there's a gun on her head, you know? Now, the various states of extortion you could invoke to cancel a contract, all of this should be combated in court. The big problem of her approach is that she just assumes that this was human trafficking that she was the victim of. And she imposes this interpretation on other entities like Twitter and YouTube. And she gets other people banned for basically reporting about a public video of hers doing artistic work. I think there is a big issue here developing, and it's been developing in all forms of censorship. We've seen basically the platforms allowing themselves things that wouldn't be allowed under governmental due process. They have been allowing themselves to make calls on what is true, what is misinformation, what is hate speech, what is not hate speech. And now, what is human trafficking and what is not human trafficking? The only solution, we go back to discussions I was having in 2017, 2018. The only solution would either be the Elon Musk approach of having balls, of saying, hey, I'm protected by Section 230. I don't have to care all that much about your complaints. If you want to have this contract invalidated with the rap group, go to the trial court, have your day in court, and get the videos canceled. That is possible. If you could prove in court, even on a civil standard of most likely evidence, most likely, most supported by evidence, if you could prove this in a civil court, you could get your contract canceled. And then the civil court could order, okay, this video is now copyright, and it is a copyright that has been extorted through human trafficking of Elisa Blur. Until then, what we have is a private control of the public space. It is individuals pushing interpretations that haven't been given in court, and therefore the other parties to this contract, the music industry, the rap groups, the people publishing these videos, and journalists wanting to talk about those videos, they all get denied due process because Twitter or YouTube is there to deny them and to make the decision that Elisa Blur wants to see. I totally object to her approach and to the handling of this approach by YouTube and Twitter. If a rap group tells you, I am bound by contract with this lady, she worked for us, she performed as an artist, they should just give it up and leave it to the court. Go away, says Jeff. If she pursued legal claims against anyone involved in the production of the videos, then I think there is some validity in taking down the video from social media until the legal proceedings are completed. If she loses the court case, then the video goes back up. Well, we're not even in a court case as far as I can see. So, your approach actually would deny still a right, which is a court must take decisions that are in line with protecting First Amendment rights, because there is such a thing as starting fake trial cases just with the goal of shutting up the other side. And one due process right that people have, including the rap groups she engaged with, they have the due process right of having a judge look at it and determine, is it necessary at this moment to deprive this rap group from their freedom of speech and deprive all of the journalists downstream who want to talk about this event, this artistic work? Or is it possible that the best way to go is to not give an order at the beginning of the case and, in fact, to wait that she makes her case in court? I believe that this is how it will end. She would have to make her case in court, and the people would have their First Amendment right protected meanwhile. Go away, says JF. The court has to, but Twitter doesn't. That is the problem. That is the massive problem, where basically Twitter is used as a shortcut to do violations of rights that the courts couldn't do, because they would be immediately appealed on an emergency basis because they touch a First Amendment right. End of the line, Joel says, these people never face a long-term loss. They suffer a very short-term embarrassment of hypocrisy, but they weather it and come out the other side as winners. Yeah, that is one of the problem with this is we're entering a world here of if you have videos that are shameful of the past, you can get them abolished if you're a woman, but you can't if you're a man. Think about the Project Veritas with the homosexual man who was on a date. You could argue, hey, this man was sexually exploited. So if sexual exploitation is human trafficking, if he was deceived as part of his sexual drive to reveal things on a hidden camera that he didn't know exist, could one argue that he was sex trafficked, that he was exploited on a sexual basis for what he was and for his drive of sex? You could make this argument. Yet the Project Veritas guy from Pfizer will never have the Project Veritas video removed. It will always be a point of shame in his life forever. But Elisa Bleu makes the same route of arguments and yet succeeds at getting it removed. That is a problem, because we are touching the point of our society is obsessed with having women not responsible for their past actions and having men fully responsible even for actions they haven't committed. Our society basically is psychotic toward men and over-empathic toward women. Lodazal says, Amber Heard is a notable exception. Yes, but as I've said back in the days of the Amber Heard trial, it's not an exception that changes the rule, unfortunately. John Drake says, yeah, that's how crazy it is in Canada. They had the text of two women conspiring to destroy this guy, and as you say, no punishment for them. Absolutely. Big problem of our time. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, can you explain why there is a trend over the last few years that female streamers who seem to be heterosexual complement each other in a sexual way? Oh, I mean, it's a thing in the sex work industry, you know. Ah, oh, queen, you look great. Ah, oh, you're gonna smash tonight. And it's a form of female sympathy and unity. I don't think there's much to think about it. It's just prostitutes, they get among themselves and they compliment each other in the same way a bunch of guys working on a building would say, oh, good job today. You did a good job. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're very strong. Good. Oh, my God, you handled that pillar very well. So what do women do? Well, they do the same. It's the same phenomenon. They work together. They work in the same industry. They want to signal, hey, I'm not your competitor. There's place for both of us. And so I'm going to complement your work because ultimately we're working at the same thing and we benefit from this kind of collaborative enthusiasm and good faith interaction among one another. But of course, women will not compliment themselves on the factors of construction work, which are strength, efficiency, good building techniques, etc. But they will compliment each other on what matters to their job, which is prostitution. Go away, says JF. Don't forget, James O'Keefe started his career as a pimp who fraudulently received an Acorn loan. That is a nice joke, but it's a joke. Fleur de Sel says, any false accusers should at least get half the time of the crime they accuse the other for. Oh yeah, I say more, because if you don't go more, you have an interest here. It's like, if I hate you, I'm willing to run the risk of passing 6 months in jail to get you 1 year in jail. So you have to make the punishment much harsher on me for lying than on you for doing the thing. That's generally the punitive aspect of justice. The punishment must be greater than the damages. That is the philosophy usually. So we learned from Elon Musk that things are looking good at Twitter. He stated today in response to a Wall Street Journal article, "Last 3 months were extremely tough as I had to save Twitter from bankruptcy while fulfilling essential Tesla and SpaceX duties. Wouldn't wish that pain on anyone. Twitter has challenges, but is now trending to break even if we keep at it. Public support is much appreciated." Let us remind ourselves of the quality of the work that was done by Elon Musk. Elon Musk successfully decimated the Twitter workforce in a satisfactory manner. It started with 50%, and then there was a little more, and you could think that he must have reached anywhere from 50% to 70%. That was a good one. Extremely good work by Elon Musk, who throughout we've seen a Twitter that became more functional with less employee cost. That is an absolute realization, and I've gained respect for Elon through this. I thought of him as okay, some guy who takes credit for technological advances. He gathers a lot of innovators around him, but it's never been clear to me whether he had what it takes to manage the increasing parasitism of a growing corporation. That is, a bunch of employees who end up getting employed by other people who are employed, and it's like a virus. It's more and more cost, and oh, I'm absolutely necessary for the company because I'm banning these people. And at some point, you have to ask yourself, is that necessary really, or are they just saying it's necessary? And by making his ultimatum to the employees, he has ensured that he was selecting employees. He was selecting employees for their willingness to work hardcore, and that gets you the really those people who have heart, who are like, okay, it's a responsibility to be working at Twitter. We have to keep it operational. We have to do whatever we can to ensure free speech goes on. And that is a beautiful technique that I have rarely seen. I don't remember seeing it at all anywhere else like this, where you put the letter and you say, if you stay, it's going to be for hardcore work. Someone sends me, a Frog Eyes sends me this Gateway Pundit article. "This will not end well. The NSA is courting thousands of fired woke big tech workers for intelligent agencies." Yeah, I mean that is funny. That is funny. That is very funny, but the intelligence agencies have lost their grounding. They are not going to be capable of penetrating Twitter as much as they've done in the past, precisely because Elon cleared the floor. So I'm not worried. They can be employed. They're going to be useless at the intelligence agencies. They're going to be tracking, analyzing, monitoring. It's all going to be the same thing. They're going to end up identifying threats that are not threats, and they're going to be missing the actual threats, which keeps. You know, this whole conception that the intelligence agencies have, that white extremism is the greatest problem in America, that they're going to be fully imbued into this culture, and they're going to pursue false routes of investigation. That there's no way around this. The intelligence agencies should listen to statistics and stop listening to political directions. Because they want white extremism to be the biggest problem in America. It's not though. The stats are very clear. If you want to work against murder rates in America, white extremism is not an intelligent investment of your resources. But the state keeps growing forever, and so I wouldn't be surprised that many of them get hired. But ultimately, the people who get hired, they were basically agents of intelligence already within the Twitter ranks. So it's something they are coming back to their natural position. Like they should have been paid by the FBI, by the CIA all along, because they were doing the bidding of them. Delcroix says they're just going back to their usual spook jobs. Exactly. It's just now in the open. They would be just properly labeled as governmental employees. Firestarter says Jeff has way too much faith in Musk. Well, he's been delivering, and we have seen a lot of people being liberated. I'm still waiting on my list of liberation. I haven't seen Millennial Woes be liberated. Those are people I expect should be liberated, and they've now said that it was now constant right to appeal. So basically, everyone can come back in if they appeal. And I would hope that Millennial Woes will get a positive answer. I'm still waiting on that caveat, that point of detail to declare my full satisfaction. But it's been working, and Twitter has been regaining life, and you can feel that we haven't been there for a long time. We've been missing from Twitter because you can see people being absolutely astonished. The leftists are like, "What?" Because leftists have joined and dominated Twitter much later than people like me. My Twitter account, when does it begin? Let me check. Joined March 2011. A lot of the Twitter accounts that came to be the dominant left-wing control of Twitter over 2 or 3 years is people who joined 2014, 2015, 2016. So they weren't for a long time on a free platform, and eventually they got cuddled by censorship. And you can see their reaction. They can't believe what they are reading. They didn't even know what existed out there in terms of cognitive diversity. Of course, I did. First, because I'm interested in all social media platform, and I'm always following all social media platforms, and also because on my show we've been welcoming a large diversity of thought that gave us a true outlook of the public space of how what are the different arguments we can hear than the ones that are approved by the mainstream. Carlos Kilface says, "Jeff, I'm the evolutionist on Twitter." Oh yeah, I love your tweet, bro. You've been I didn't know it was you. I didn't link Carlos with the evolutionist, but the evolutionist, you have a very good Twitter account. Really appreciate your work there. Excellent. And he says, "But all my tweets end up in show additional replies, including those that may contain offensive content. So I'm experimenting with ChatGPT to translate my tweets into Twitter-friendly tweets to increase reach. Fingers crossed." That is a good practice. I mean, it's something that I wouldn't need ChatGPT to do because I'm like an old schooler of the internet. I've seen all the algorithms and I've seen everything they've pulled on us. And I always know how to phrase stuff to avoid these troubles, but it's a skill you need to gain. You may not have cared because you were starting a small Twitter account, but I see that you put a lot of effort in the quality of your Twitter contribution, and so it's worth it for you to learn these things. Hopefully, the goal would eventually be that you don't need ChatGPT because it's really not that hard. You need to know what are the trigger terms, and there's always a way to express an idea without the trigger term. And so, yeah, however edgy the idea is, if you talk about race, maybe race is not the best word you can use to avoid trouble with the algorithm. Diversity may be a better word. If you talk about control of media, control of stuff, you can talk about nepotism. Nepotism is a global term that doesn't target anyone in particular. Just very good term that will make your point. So yes, everything is doable. You shouldn't give up and learn from your ChatGPT interaction. Speaker's Corner says, are people paying to use ChatGPT? What is their revenue model? For now, ChatGPT is an experimental beta kind of thing where they give it for free to the public, and because that allows them to gather more information about the functioning. Eventually, perhaps it will be commercialized, but we're not there. If you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. That is how you can best support the show and keep us going. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. I was saying on Twitter, the IDW, the intellectual dark web, is getting exposed as the protection racket that it is. There's a guy who was describing an interaction with Eric Weinstein. So at first it was a tweet of Darren Beatty who was saying Jordan Peterson, Lex Fridman, Barry Weiss, and the IDW crowd are basically spokesmen telling you what the algorithms gives you permission to say. Rest assured, you can still be good cattle and think the pronoun stuff has gotten out of hand. And someone was saying, incredibly interesting how whenever you talk about Fridman or Weiss, people like the Weinstein brothers just spontaneously appear. We were having a space to talk about Fridman and how he gets the access he does. Just a bunch of friendo anon right-wingers with a typical audience. We couldn't be more far removed from Eric Weinstein in Twitter terms, but sure enough, he showed up maybe 30 minutes into the space, which had about 100 people listening. He shows up and it brings hundreds of his credentialist simps with him. He requests the mic. I give him permission to speak. He goes on and on about how the internet always tries to burn down good people who try to do anything, how Lex is some immigrant success story, etc. Totally neglects to mention how he was the one who arranged his MIT relationship. I think there is a lot of frustration going on with the IDW, which has been a network of self-promotion and nothing else, you know, that has not been truly engaging with anything outside of their bubble that is giving the impression of honest intellectual work, but I doubt it given their unwillingness to acknowledge, for example, my theory, the revolutionary phenotype, the answers that Brett gave to my accusation of plagiarism yesterday, completely unacceptable. I think the IDW is being legitimately called out for a kind of bullshit intellectualism that turns out to be a center of nepotism coordination for just a group of people who have decided to launch a self-promotion. Mark says, I would pay $20 for ChatGPT mode that was not slowed down by leftism. Oh, yeah, that would be fun. Something interesting happened yesterday. So on the Brett plagiarism case, yesterday I was thinking out loud on the show, should I contact the victim of the plagiarism? A man named Sherlock Genomes Pathogenetics on Twitter. And I thought, yeah, that would be fair, you know, to get his insight. Because ultimately, plagiarism is plagiarism, whether the victim consents to it or not, whether she cares or not. But I thought, let's get his insight on how he came with the numbers that Brett stated on stream. That would be fun, and that would give us a perspective. So I talked to him in DM. At Pathogenetics, I had a conversation with him in DM, and he gave me a superb insight. So My impression that he was the originator of these numbers is correct. He was truly calculating back of the envelope style. He ended up doing roundings. So the precision of his numbers are almost impossible to get anywhere else in the world because he decided to round them like this. He decided to say, oh, that's less than one person, instead of saying 0.75%. He decided to round a number that may have been around 84%. He decided to report it as 80%. So what happened in the generation of the numbers about Omicron non-synonymous mutations is that on December 5th, this is now the tweet that I claim Brett Weinstein has plagiarized. On December 5th, at Pathogenetics has been pointing to his calculations about the genetics structure of Omicron and mentioned a couple of numbers about how the non-synonymous mutations were abnormally high in Omicron. He made these calculations, reported three elements that are present in Brett's stream: the less than 1% number, the 80% number, and this whole thing being represented as a hundredfold difference between the two measures. That is what Brett reported word for word also on his stream. Pathogenetics came to these numbers by making his own calculations following a set of various conversations that have happened on Twitter in the 5 days, 5 or 6 days that preceded his tweet. So they were all geneticists and people interested in genetic history and phylogeny. They were pulling each genes of Omicron and they were saying, oh, here's one mutation that's non-synonymous. Here's one that is not. And these numbers eventually were gathered by Sherlock Genomes, and he made the statement on December 5th, which eventually made it to a Brett Weinstein stream. Now, amazingly, this guy is very cool. He was super open with me, and he's now coming out publicly. He says, I have been made aware that Brett Weinstein used my awesome Twitter content in the form of on-the-fly calculations, including rounding, without attribution during the dinner table conversations he films with his wife. So I'm so glad that he decided to come out publicly. I didn't encourage him. I told him, you have no obligations in this. I'm not pressuring you. You do what you want. I'm trying to understand. I come to you as a journalist. I want to understand. And he decided to come out with this characterization. Now, let me correct a misunderstanding, pathogenetics. This was not a dinner table conversation. This was the Dark Horse podcast. It's a scientific podcast. You were plagiarized. You were plagiarized by a science. This was not a home discussion between Brett that just turned out to be filmed. And so it gives me a confidence that since he confirms, as I had the impression based on the public record, but since he has confirmed to me personally that how he did the calculation, I have absolute confidence that he is the originator and the target of the plagiarism here, or some downstream source that plagiarized him in the first place. But in any case, I am convinced now that we have here a case of plagiarism and a case of improper attribution of this man's work. So that is encouraging. I have updated my Twitter thread giving all of these updates yesterday night. And again, I'm still in my position of yesterday night. We will wait up to Sunday. We will wait up to s next Sunday, in 7 days from now, and then I can do my final conclusions based on whether Brett has addressed this issue or not. From his speech of yesterday, he may be, I don't know, one may conclude that he doesn't want to engage with it. He said, I don't want to bring attention to this. Well, if you don't bring attention to this, we're going to have to conclude on the facts that we have. If you don't give us your side of the explanation, Brett, we're going to have to move on here. So I'm giving it up to Sunday. Fedozoraptor has sent a super chat. He says, it seems to me that it's always the leftist who build the best shit, like ChatGPT. I wouldn't conclude this. Never forget that the big innovators that made the internet and all and all the social media of Web 2.0 and eventually Web 3.0 with cryptocurrency, perhaps we could say, all of this, we don't know about these people. They wouldn't tell us if they were right-wing. But their invention is imbued with a concern that I would qualify as kind of right-wing, kind of libertarian. You know, the way the internet is designed clearly was the first layer of non-centrality. And everything from there stemmed to be non-central, non-central. And sometimes centralization was taking over, but eventually it was losing. You know, centralization in the form of banks, for example, taking over the internet, becoming a staple of what you can get in services on the internet, and then whew, Bitcoin shows up. So there's always a fight, but you can feel that the entirety of the internet is converging toward decentralization in a beautiful way. So I wouldn't worry about this. I think that a lot of the inventors may have been at heart libertarians. And it has shown in the way they have created stuff. And then, yes, of course, it gets taken over by leftists. Flower de Sel says, so when do we get... And let's not forget that innovators, unfortunately, in today's world, will be a lot coming from our universities. So they will be brainwashed. They will be brainwashed by the liberal control of universities. But I feel that they are different than the other sheep type of liberal. I feel that they are not NPCs, those people who have invented anything from the protocols of the internet to HTML, PHP to social media. Plow de Sel says, so when do we get ChatJFGT? Well, it seems that it takes a massive amount of training sets data. It seems that it takes hundreds of terabytes to just train an AI to act like ChatGPT as it acts in its public face right now. So, I will never invest so much money, perhaps millions of dollars, just to train an AI just for the fun of having my own AI. On top of it, I'm in Canada. That wouldn't be the place to do it, because if you want to make a based AI, it would end up saying stuff that will get you in jail, basically, with the hate speech laws and stuff like this. Go Away says, have you tried the AI chatbots on character.ai? There's a Kanye West bot that says positive things about Alex Jones and Fuentes, uncensored, and will even talk about nepotistic influence. AI messages removed, but only after they have been fully revealed. Very cool. Well, thank people have talked to me about character.ai. I will explore it. I've never tested it, but you guys have let me know that it was something I need to do. Character.ai, I will give it a try. Sinus says, the inventors usually are more centrist in my experience, but those who give them their capital, meaning the VCs, yield to the will of intransigent people because they want to make as much money as possible. Taleb wrote about this. Yes, there is this corporate fear. A lot of the leftism is not inherent to every individual in the system, but it's imposing itself on everyone through fear. The problem is, if you're a corporation, you have all of the interest to be in bed with the government, to not be a threat to the government, to not be potentially the target. Because when you're a corporation, you're basically accumulating flows of money. Now, these flows of money, they can be taken away from you at with no notice by just a one person in the government getting funded by, say, a George Soros to go after you for whatever, for discrimination, let's say. They open a discrimination case against you. And there's always going to be stories. There's always going to be some people pissed at you in your corporation. So the people who invest in corporations and who want to make money from the valuation of the stock, they are extremely keen and aware of the potential effect to their reputation if anything goes wrong, and the fact that eventually this society, everyone can turn against you in a clap of the fingers. So they want to maintain this image. This corporation is doing everything by the book. No problem here, sir. And that cost a lot. It cost a lot through stifling of creativity in the young corporation. It cost a lot of extra legalese type of work that is being done in your corporation just for the purpose of protecting yourself. And there's an entire business of, you know, discrimination. You know, like D'Angelo, these conferences. So, we didn't do discrimination, Your Honor. We had our yearly conference on racism, sensibilizing our employees to racism. How could we be racist? Like, how could we be discriminatory? We've done everything to include everyone. So a lot of money just gets thrown out the window outside of the productive line of the corporation. And it sucks. It sucks because it's a huge weight on our society. It's an extortionist system, ultimately. It's like, if you don't pay us, we're going to make you look like you're a racist, and you're going to have hundreds of millions of dollars in liability out of nowhere coming from a judge. Pitozoraptor says, JF, do you think an AI could take everything you ever said and wrote and reincarnate you after you die to close perfection, including your creativity and sense of humor? Yeah, I think for a streamer like me who's been revealing as much as from my inner thoughts, I wouldn't be surprised that the totality of what is out there on the internet of me speaking, because I speak basically 1 to 2 hours per day. That is somewhere like 5 to 10% of my life that is leaving a trace in the public record. That would be enough to totally reconstruct me, I believe. Because I believe there's this essentialist view of ourselves. Humans love to romanticize ourselves and think, oh, you know, there's no real way in which you can capture the JF. People like to think that about themselves. I don't think that at all. I think the world is extremely limited. Our brains are extremely limited. We have ultimately behavioral patterns that we deploy. We have a couple of standards, principles, ways of doing, ways of speaking. And that captures us all in a way that an AI could totally capture. I'm pretty sure the AI would do a better job at imitating me than I would. Because think about it, like can I do a JF 2016? I don't know that I can. I don't know that the man... I'm perhaps too comfortable in my life to be the JF of 2016. Guess what? I think it's the case. I think the AI could capture a better reproduction of who I was. Because back then, I was working hard to build my internet career. And I had to go work at the grocery store all day. I would place milk. I would place milk and cheese in the aisle. And I would be like, okay, I need to think about what I could do on the stream tonight. At times it wasn't stream back then, it was just a video, but I was still streaming my filming of the video back then on Twitch. back in the crowd days, I was thinking throughout the day as a worker. And that changes your contribution. It's very different from today where I have a super satisfying life, super happy life in a home, on a land. I have construction work to do. Today I was pumping oil. It's just a pleasure to be keeping my family warm with oil that I'm pumping myself and not have to worry about, you know, getting minimal salary from a grocery store job because I have to survive. It's a very different context, and the AI could capture it in a way that I may not be able to. If the AI pays attention, okay, something changed in 2016 JF, 2018 JF, he could capture all of it. Sinus says, these are almost unvoiced standards. Talking about the corporate world, okay. Mark says, but then it isn't the real JF emulation. Well, I tend to think that the division between emulation and real doesn't exist. We are all emulating. We are all a set of physical consequences. There is no real JF. And the JF that I was 5 years ago is another man. Dino Lagovic sends a super chat. He says, JF, I listened to the stream yesterday whilst driving. The remark about Nazi fans is not just disingenuous, it is insulting. I knew little about this man, but now have a poor opinion of him. Yeah, I hope that it wasn't his last comment on the issue. But if that is his last, disappointing. I'm disappointed. People were saying, JF, disappoint on the regular chat. That is what I feel. I just feel... But it's been like this basically for all people I've ever respected in the intellectual domain. Because the Richard Dawkins, you know, I've been respecting him for his writing. But again and again, it has come to be a disappointment in terms of his ability to engage rationally in anything social science related. There's also a disappointment with Richard Dawkins with his obsession of putting woman forward at the cost of losing his own credibility. Like, Richard Dawkins still hasn't ever done a public comment on the revolutionary phenotype. Yet, back in 2016, or, you know, back in maybe more than this, maybe 2015, he was promoting Jacqueline Glenn. Because, oh, she's a female and she's an atheist. Now, Jacqueline Glenn turned out to be a plagiarist who I've exposed. If you want to see some old school YouTube video, I don't know if I could find it.
Following is,
ladies and gentlemen, JF from 2015. I've been full-time streaming since then.
Series of revelations by multiple YouTubers, it appears that YouTube atheist celebrity Jacqueline Glenn has engaged into a series of acts of plagiarism over the...
Look at him. Look at this guy. Woman being promoted... You promoted someone who couldn't think, Richard. You promoted someone whose only way to elevate herself on the public space was to steal information from others through plagiarism.
The past 3 years. In this video, I summarize and analyze the current findings, and I add two new cases of plagiarism which were not discussed previously.
Troll.
First, let us look at the historical context in which Jacqueline Glenn's plagiarism occurred. This is a graph illustrating the amount of views per month for Jacqueline Glenn's channel, summarizing her entire career. To help you situate yourself, consider that it is in June 2011 that Rebecca Watson and Richard Dawkins initiated Elevator Gate, and in which Richard Dawkins wrote the famous letter, Dear Muslima. At this time, and in the year that followed, Jacqueline Glenn was still a relatively unknown YouTuber and a firm believer in God.
Like, my inbox was just flooding with, like, responses to my comment. People saying, you know, how can you claim to be a Christian and not to...
My accent changed a lot. I cannot believe this was my way of phrasing stuff. Unadulterated OGJF.
Support his statement. So that's what I want to make this video about, how I can claim that I am a Christian and completely have no respect for Rick Perry at all. But I believe in God. I'm not really like most Christians. I have my own little set of beliefs, and if you want me to make a video on that, leave a comment. I don't know why you would, because it's just how I feel.
So we can consider the whole period up to July 2012 as a period in which Jacqueline Glenn is a Christian. However, in July 2012, she starts posting some videos on RichardDawkins.net in which she is more critical of religion.
So I think that I'm confusing a lot of people as to where I personally stand, and it's a really long story, so I'm going to try to condense it as much as I can to make the video short. So I started reading the Bible, and I saw like all these contradictory quotes, and no one could give me any answers. And the only answers I could get from people were hypocritical ones, like, oh, that's, you know, that's just, you have to take that as like a symbolism.
About a year later, in August 2013, Jacqueline's popularity explodes due to a series of videos about religion in which she takes an atheist stance. Gathering the support from important members of the atheist community, such as P.Z. Myers, and filming an interview with Richard Dawkins.
An idea of who we're talking about. Ray Comfort is the guy known as the Banana Man, and the reason for that is because he tried to argue that a banana is evidence of God because it's shaped so perfectly to fit in our hand.
We will label the whole period that precedes this ascension to success as the conversion period. Finally, we will label the peak of her career as the prominent atheist period during which she has been at the forefront of the YouTube atheism community. Now, it is interesting to consider the events of plagiarism that have been recently exposed on YouTube, including two new cases which will be later shown for the first time in this video. The interesting question is whether plagiarism came before success or the other way around. What came first, plagiarism or success? A plot of the events of...
This is good content. I don't know if you guys agree. Of course, it's a little easy for me to say that to a JF crowd, but this is good fucking content. I want to know. So was it the plagiarism first or success first?
Plagiarism makes it clear that Jacqueline's copying of prominent atheist figures predates her success. As early as June 2013, Jacqueline plagiarizes three works before her channel had attained any major popularity. It is quite interesting to see how each act of plagiarism that has been uncovered seems to be followed by increases of the...
Go Away says, whose video is this? It's my video. This is my behavioral reinforcement theory of Jacqueline Glenn. She plagiarized, she got rewarded with it. She plagiarized more, she got rewarded with it. She plagiarized more, she got rewarded with it. She had a drop, she plagiarized again, got rewarded with it. Little drop, plagiarize, goes up. This is beautiful. This is science. Jacqueline Glenn was pushed to the top by feminism, by desire to, A, woman can do it too. And through the, and she exploited, parasitized this movement that was like, hey, we need good arguments coming from woman. And she wasn't able to produce those good arguments, so she stole them. Me and plagiarism dates back a long time.
The view count of Jacqueline's channel in the 2 or 3 months that follow. This may indicate that Jacqueline was getting signals from her audience that plagiarized ideas would allow her to boost the popularity of her channel. Another argument suggesting that the plagiarized videos were pleasing is when we compare the average views of all of Jacqueline's video with the average views for videos in which plagiarized content was found. The average video without plagiarism published by Jacqueline makes a total of 124k views.
Science, motherfuckers! Science! She was scoring higher on the YouTube scale with plagiarism. Her IDs were less interesting than the IDs she could steal.
As of December 2015, while the videos in which plagiarized content was found make up an average of 268k total views. That's more than twice the average number of viewers. This suggests that by plagiarizing content from other authors, Jacqueline was increasing the success of her channel and potentially increasing her income. This also means that Jacqueline was aware that plagiarism was paying off in terms of views. I was quite curious to know what happened in the months that preceded her first known acts of plagiarism, which seemed to have been a cornerstone in causing the success of her channel. This video, published 1 month before there was any sign that Jacqueline Glenn would become a leading YouTuber, explains the context very well.
So, I look awful, I didn't have time to do anything, get ready for this video, whatever, but it's appropriate because I'm talking about body image, so I just, you know, who cares? And I feel awful, and the only reason why I'm smiling and acting like this is because I took a bunch of Adderall and caffeine, so yay for drugs!
So no biggie, she was just taking some Adderall and... Wait, what? This girl is as high as a kite! In the 3 days that preceded this video, Jacqueline expresses her love of a prescription drug called Adderall. On Twitter, she writes, "I heart Adderall, with many hells."
Look at this. I was digging through Twitter, a tweet that had 2 likes. This is research, motherfuckers. This is research.
And on Instagram, she posts a picture of herself looking tough, reporting on Twitter, "Don't fuck with me on Adderall," this time with the correct number of L's, but many exclamation mark. She feels invincible. So here we need an interlude to talk about drugs. Adderall is truly the most pleasant prescription drug to be on. It contains similar molecules to those sold as speed or amphetamines on the recreational drug market.
Can't we have good things like this? Why does that not exist anymore on the internet?
It is used because it helps people with ADHD to concentrate and focus at school or at work. This is why it is also referred to as the study drug. Being on Adderall is a quite pleasant experience, and depending on the dose, it can become addictive. Users may experience feelings of intense well-being and euphoria. It is unknown if Jacqueline was taking this medication before or if the onset of her consumption truly precedes her episode of plagiarism by only a month. To my knowledge, these tweets and this YouTube video
Look at this graph. Use of drugs. Plagiarism. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. This is science happening right in front of your eyes. I mean... just looking at this temporal relationship, I was like, something is happening here. She started Adderall, or started at least talking publicly about it, and celebrating getting it, and boom, she goes into massive plagiarism mode.
Are the only known reference to her use of this particular medication, and they all occurred in a relatively tight window of time, just before Jacqueline's success. It should be noted that other events for which we do not have precise dates may have occurred in this time period, including the abandonment of her studies for becoming a nurse. One interesting fact is that Jacqueline mentions that she has taken a bunch of Adderall. Very rarely will a physician prescribe a bunch of these pills. Patients are normally told to take a fixed number per day, generally 1 or 2. So this opens the possibility that she may have been abusing Adderall at that time. In any case, the goal here is not to conclude that Adderall has caused the episode of plagiarism, but rather to develop an understanding of the context in which Jacqueline's popularity has exploded. a context in which her brain's reward center were hijacked by prescription drugs and in parallel stimulated by the excitement of a growing YouTube fame that seemed to directly result from plagiarized content. It is important to consider that the events described up to now, including the first known acts of plagiarism, have occurred before there was any major sign of the upcoming rise in YouTube popularity for Jacqueline. So now let us look at the three cases of plagiarism that were found in a single video published in June 2013. Note that most of the cases of plagiarism described in this video were found by other people, and I have quoted these people wherever it was appropriate. In what follows, the statements of Jacqueline will be displayed on the left and the plagiarized source will be displayed on the right. The name of the person who discovered the plagiarism will be displayed at the bottom. The first case concerns the plagiarism of one internet author and two public personalities, Bill Maher and Stephen Fry.
God I want to go over is Horus. It was a god that was written about in the Egyptian Book of the Dead in 1280 BC, and here are some of the similarities. First of all, he was a son of God. Some people disagree whether or not he was born of a virgin. But that's in some stories of him. He was baptized in a river. He was tempted in the desert. He healed the sick. Cured the blind. And cast out demons.
Walk like
walked on water.
Egyptian.
He raised someone named Asar, A-S-A-R, from the dead.
Walk like
and that actually literally translates to Lazarus.
Like Egyptian.
He had 12 disciples. He was crucified. And rose from the dead 3 days later. That's just a few things.
Man, I loved the Jacqueline Glenn research. Because this girl, you would find a nugget of plagiarism and you would find the vein and it would be like, oh, she plagiarized every word. And it's like, you would just, all you had to do is find one sentence, locate it somewhere. And then it was like, everything around it came to be plagiarized.
They didn't have that much in common. But anyways, the next god I want to talk to you about is Krishna. Here are a few things that they had in common. Both the son of God, both sent from heaven to earth in the form of a man, both called the Savior, the second person of the Trinity. His adoptive father was a human and a carpenter. Both were visited at birth by wise men and shepherds, guided by a star. Both were without sin. They were both God-men, both being human and divine. Both performed many miracles, including healing disease, one of them being making a leper whole. Both cast out indwelling demons and raised the dead. Both selected disciples to spread his teachings. Both were meek and merciful. Both were criticized for associating with sinners. Both celebrated a Last Supper. Both forgave his enemies. Both descended into hell and were resurrected. Many people witnessed their ascensions into heaven. And that brings me to the last god, Mithra.
There are amazing things claimed about Mithras, and I'll read you some of them. He was a savior, Mithras.
Mithras was a Roman god. He was the savior.
Sent to earth to live as a mortal.
He was sent to earth to live as a mortal.
Through whom it was possible for sinners to be reborn into immortal life. He died for our sins, but came back to life the following Sunday.
He died for our sins so that sinners could have everlasting life. But of course, he was resurrected from the dead.
He was born of a virgin on December the 25th in a manger or perhaps a cave.
He was born from a virgin on December 25th.
Attended by shepherds and became known as the light of the world.
And guess what? He was born in a manger with lots of shepherds and they referred to him as the light of the world.
He had 12 disciples with whom he shared a last meal before dying.
He also had 12 disciples and they also had a last supper before he died.
His devotees symbolically consumed the flesh and blood of him.
The people who used to worship this god would have symbolic meals of his flesh and blood.
Because Mithras was a sun god, he was worshipped on Sundays.
Is he a tribute band?
He's often depicted with a halo around his head.
Oh.
And Mithraists gave each other gifts on December the 25th. The leader of the religion was called a Papa, and their HQ was on Vatican Hill in Rome.
Pictures of him often depicted a halo around his head, and HQ was, guess what, on the Vatican Hill in Rome.
So here, as early as June 2013, we have evidence that Jacqueline Glenn is engaging in direct reading of written articles and direct retranscription of videos. Jacqueline has still not recognized these events publicly.
Would you say this is like the first time you've done that, or would you say that, you know, it's something you've done before, but you usually do it a little better?
Well, the thing is people have accused me of it before with a Facebook comment that I admitted to and then went back and credited. As far as videos and stuff, like, this is not something that I do. Like, I do not watch people's videos and, like, write down what they say and repeat them. That's ridiculous.
So Air Jacqueline is lying. She does look at people's video and she does write what they say. So these three early cases of plagiarism allow us to add TV personalities Stephen Fry and Bill Maher to the list of plagiarized people, as well as author B.A. Robinson from religioustolerance.org. We will now have a look at the two following cases of plagiarism that occurred in October 2013. In these two instances, Jacqueline Glenn is reading almost word for word the Facebook comments of members of her audience.
Obamacare is law. It was passed by both the Senate and the House. It was signed by the President, upheld by the Supreme Court, and reaffirmed by the 2012 presidential election. I mean, if the Tea Party wants to advance their agenda, then maybe they should actually win national elections. Now, the House of Representatives are elected from districts, many of which are gerrymandered, and certainly a House representative does not speak for the majority of American voters. They only speak for voters in their districts. And it appears that a small fraction of one political party is being allowed to use extortion and hostage-taking in an effort to put an end to democracy in America, if you want to even call it that. And a lot of Americans are supporting this effort. And you know what? It's not so much the political differences or the disagreement on different issues. It's that the Republican Party just seems to evolve ever more into a depth of apathy, irresponsibility, ignorance, and carelessness, and a willful degradation to the quality of life for human beings in America. It's not so much about the politics. It's about the protection of human rights that the GOP just continues to battle at every single fucking turn.
So these two instances allow us to add Dorothy Freeman and Idai Moya to our list. The following case is unclear about who Jacqueline Glenn plagiarized from. Her wording is very similar to a post on Yahoo Answers by Wacko Jacko. However, the post by Wacko Jacko was made a couple of days after the publication of Jacqueline's video, so it is unlikely that Jacqueline has plagiarized from the Yahoo Answers post directly. She may have taken it from somewhere else where Wacko Jacko would have posted before he posted it to Yahoo Answers. In any case, we know that this is a case of plagiarism because the wording used is very close to a statement made by Dave Muscato, which was reported on Facebook 5 days before Jacqueline posted her video. Thus, the only uncertainty is about whether Jacqueline plagiarized from Dave Muscato directly or from a post of Wacko Jacko on a yet-to-be-identified forum.
Keep your creation mythologies out of our science classes. Keep your God out of our governments. Keep it out of our pledge, off of our money, out of our state seals and courthouse oaths. Keep it out of our civil laws regarding abortion access, birth control access, and marriage equality. Keep it out of our sex ed classes. And stop using religion as an excuse to prevent the progression of scientific advancements, including stem cell research. Stop doing those things, and we'll have nothing left to say. Because 100% of what we fight for and what we say is in response to religious people. If they really did just believe what they want to believe and didn't push it on people, didn't affect other people's lives, didn't harm people, we would have nothing to say and I wouldn't be complaining, but that is not the world that we live in. We have to respond to what is coming at us and we have to deal with it. That's not something you can tell me to live and let live on.
Now let us have a look at the following event from January 2014 in which Jacqueline Glenn plagiarizes Sam Harris.
And, you know, we shouldn't be watching cartoonists have their lives threatened by people who can't tolerate jokes about the Prophet Muhammad.
Comedians, cartoonists, and YouTubers shouldn't have to worry about getting their lives threatened for making fun of Muhammad.
Well, I should be clear. In criticizing Islam, I'm not criticizing all Muslims.
I don't want to criticize every single Muslim.
They're Muslims who don't take the doctrine very seriously. They're Muslims who don't read the Quran with any attention.
Same thing in every religion.
Yes.
Yeah. I know that there are some out there that don't take it as seriously, just like in any religion.
And it's as though we're encountering the Christians of the 14th century, you know, armed with 21st century weapons.
But the problem is that it's like they're Christians of the 14th century with the technology and weapons of the 21st century.
Yeah, it's just, the problem is we just don't have 500 years to work it out.
But we don't have 500 or 600 years to figure this shit out.
We have incredibly destructive technology spreading all over the world, and it's getting increasingly easy for one person to screw up life.
All right. I can't play the whole video because there would still be 15 minutes of it. But yeah, I remembered this video yesterday as I was thinking about plagiarism. And perhaps we can have a look at the conclusion that I did back then.
We're also looking for conversion stories from people who once were Christians and later became atheists. Between September and December 2015. As you can see on the Google search result statistics, these two series of discoveries have resulted in increases in Google searches for Jacqueline Glenn. When the trolls are unleashed, the Google searches increase inevitably. In fact, the second wave of plagiarism discoveries has created as much interest as Jacqueline's photo shoot for Playboy in June 2015. Many questions remain unanswered. Are there still other cases of plagiarism to be discovered? Did Jacqueline's use of prescription drug have any impact on her creative abilities? Did drugs put her into a production mode where results and views were the only target worthy of her focus? I, for one, believe that Jacqueline Glenn has never truly been an intellectual, but that she was pushed into that role by the forces of the YouTube market and by leaders of the atheist community. After a series of events in 2011 and 2012, the atheist community was looking for prominent female speakers who could demonstrate that atheism is not reserved to white males, and leaders of the community were also looking for conversion stories from people who once were Christians and later became atheists. Jacqueline Glenn was the perfect candidate. She was young, female, beautiful, and her whole conversion history from Christianity to atheism was available on YouTube. But the leaders of the atheist community put her forward without doing their homework, and her work was not original. Soon, her limited ability to generate creative videos of her own on subjects relating to politics and atheism pushed her into plagiarism. Plagiarism was the only way to surf on the wave of YouTube fame that was sent her way by the atheist community, and to obtain the views that she wanted so hard. This is something to keep in mind next time they choose a poster child for the atheist movement, but that's a subject for another video. Thank you. following is...
That is beauty, my friends. The thieves, the plagiarists, the people who benefit from things without proper attribution, put to sleep, knocked down, eliminated, forever a trace of their actions left on the public space, in beauty. David Smith says, oh shit, that was 8 years ago. Yeah, 8 years ago, I produced this video. Those were some of the highest viewership videos of my YouTube channel in the early days. You know, a lot of people have come to know me after the crowd days, but I was there for years, and I was a pain in the ass before crowd. No, someone was asking if I was playing the piano. No, I wouldn't play such a Chopin song as well as this. That would need a lot of practice, and I wouldn't be as good as this. This was a professional interpretation. Simeon says, JF, the comment left yesterday about those people... well, Simeon, if I didn't continue reading your comment, that should make you guess that I don't want to reread it today either. I had to clip out your comment because I read it without knowing what you were about to say, and then I realized as you said it. So don't give me job like this. You know, I like to go sleep after I've listened to such beauty, but when some idiot like you gives me comments that violate the rules, I have to go back to the video, clip out, find the place, clip it cleanly. Don't force me to do that work. Shut the fuck up. Cloud Warmer sends 25 LBC, says, I'm late, but I agree with Dino Legovic. I was also insulted by the comment that I am somehow a Nazi because I enjoy listening to your content. Academia and its mainstream talking heads are entirely disingenuous. To hand wave away anyone who criticizes your work in such manner says everything. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Aquanaut says, may the light of autism keep toxic behavior in check across all eras of time. Man, I wish we were in a world where this style of video would still make it. It's the thing is, the production demands have become so intense. People have to be on the internet every day. They don't have to take the time like I was doing then. I could take a month and, you know, work on the cleanliness of it, work on the quality of the audio, the music. And this, someone said, this use of Chopin, JF, is brutal. Yes, man, that was... that was something, that was a moment like basically making me cry. Just the beauty of the dance of the end of this video that I've put over Chopin.
Glenn has never truly been an intellectual, but that she was pushed into that role by the forces of the youth.
You know, it's like the Chopin song brings you into the death of an ID. The death of an ID that Jacqueline Glenn taught anything, that we were in a free market of ideas, that, oh yeah, the greatness of her argument will win. Everyone knows she was just a bimbo, and it turns out we now know she was a bimbo so idiotic that she had to steal everything she was doing. Dead Star sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, if you are interested in the full potential of amphetamines, read the experiences of Finnish soldier Amo on Wiki. Okay, I was not aware of this. I will check it out. That is it for tonight, boys. I'm sorry it turned into not so much of a live show, but when I see good stuff, I put it forward, and it just turned out that you guys gave me the idea to just show it. The Jacqueline Glenn plagiarism scandal, the link will be in the description below. Todd Warmer says, the problem as well, JF, is everyone is looking for the zingers and clips. The majority of people don't seem to have the ability to sit and take in intellectual videos that exceed a few minutes. Ryan Dawson's videos suffer the same way. There isn't enough wipes, loud music, and explosions. Yeah, it's the reality of the current public space. I have worked so hard for this not to happen. But when you think about it, with the whole censorship that's happening and the censoring of creators, the longer your shows are, the more likely you're going to step on a stone that you shouldn't step on. And intimidation of creators is at the heart of why long-form content isn't the dominant mode anymore, and quality content. Dead Star says, read it for the stream, it's not too long. The Aimo Koivunen experiences. Koivunen was a Finnish soldier assigned to a ski patrol along with several other Finnish soldiers. He became fatigued after skiing for a long distance. He was carrying his patrol's entire supply of army-issued pervitin or methamphetamine, a stimulant used to remain awake while on duty. He consumed the entire supply and had a short burst of energy, but soon entered a state of delirium and eventually lost consciousness. Separated from his patrol and having no supplies, lay in a ditch for a week waiting for help, which is double the average human heartbeat. In the week that he was gone, he subsisted only on pine buds and a single Siberian jay that he caught and ate raw. He was found and survived until he died in 1989 at the age of 71. Well, there were drug consumers before Jacqueline Glenn, certainly. Italy's internet restored after nationwide outage, reports of global ransomware attack. The long-term negative effects of ESG will be catastrophic indeed. It's the whole culture of leftist intimidation introduced to the stock market, and it suffers from arbitrary labeling and arbitrary accounting. Netflix strikes partnership with GM to feature electric vehicles on its titles. Oh my god, the Netflix movies will be even more, you know, basically product placement features for leftists. Not only will the leftists have all the dominant ideology in there, all the diversity they want, all of the different sexual lifestyles represented, they're also going to be in electric vehicles. Facebook, Instagram threaten to restrict or ban Project Veritas. Facebook and Instagrams, both owned by Meta, are threatening to restrict or ban Project Veritas. On Friday, the nonprofit journalism organization published footage that appears to show one of its reporters confronting YouTube's vice president of global trust and safety, Matt Alprin. So, ambush journalism. Going to someone who's on the streets or in a restaurant, in a public area, and asking them questions is not harassment. If you do it once, it is not harassment. If you do it repeatedly and make the life of the person difficult, it could be harassment. But here we have another example of Project Veritas is doing things by the book. They're doing things that have always been made in journalistic practice. And now YouTube, now the various private entities controlling the internet, they end up controlling them and keeping them from doing their work without due process. Go away, says Jeff. Why was Dawkins so against religion? Why, as an evolutionary biologist, would he not just accept religious inclinations as a naturally evolved feature of humanity? Well, I think that Dawkins perceived a project in his time, a project of rationality that he thought would be to the advantage of state science. So basically, from a liberal, leftist English perspective, he benefits from people being attracted to the educational system. And to him, one of the points of resistance must have been religious traditionalism, because where I live, you know, I've been driving very far from civilization, but I see our Christian communities. They are able to raise their own children in the faith, in religion, sometimes as homeschooling, sometimes in religious schools. All of this takes away the part of humanity that could potentially be the clientele of the state educational system. So I think that whether he was thinking about this consciously or not, he properly perceived that the enemy is religion. The enemy to state clientelism for diplomas and academic accomplishment is traditionalism and religion. I think that Dawkins was also motivated by personal hate. I think he's often told the story of being in a Christian school of sort and taking issue with the authoritarianism, not enjoying it, and he even makes the mention of perhaps some sexual assault by a priest, but he also said about this that it didn't bother him very much, maybe just a stroke of the dick occurring, apparently. So there's a set of motivations. But I think that ultimately, the story of Dawkins with militant atheism is the story of a partnership with a force that is hostile to Christian traditionalism in America. Ultimately, the reason why Dawkins is an interesting tool for the elites controlling the media is that he is anti-Christian traditionalism. He is the enemy of a form of religious naivete or even stupidity or lack of knowledge about science and a denial of science. And as such, he's a great tool. I don't know to what extent, you know, if I was talking to Dawkins about this, perhaps my first question on the mind would be, is Dawkins understanding that he may have been recruited as a force that had his own good intentions, but that was recruited as a tool to enact other intentions that are darker on the demographic stabilities of the Christian population of America? And would he acknowledge at least having had the effect through a promotion of atheism to veer people away from a lifestyle that was evolutionarily fit for themselves, the lifestyle of traditionalism, the lifestyle of high breathing rate that we still see in communities and in families that have remained Christian after militant atheism? Those would be my question to him. That is it for tonight, Buzz. Much love, and I will see you all tomorrow. Oh yeah, I forgot to say, I'm going on Koto Gottfried. He wants to talk about, Koto Gottfried. He wanted to talk about false right-wing beliefs. He wanted to talk about the fact that the right wing is ceding to statism. So we'll be having a discussion about this. It will be in 25 minutes from now. Follow my social media links if you'd like to get the update and the link. Bye bye. Thank you.